Picture this. Okay. It is the year 2026. You are watching the grand finals of a massive major esports tournament.
Oh, yeah.
The stadium is absolutely packed. The lights are flashing everywhere. And the prize pool is sitting at a cool $1 million. And the winning player, they aren't moving at all.
Right. Just totally still.
Exactly. They aren't frantically clicking a mouse or, mashing buttons on a controller. They are sitting there completely still, executing these flawless, lightning-fast game mechanics using absolutely nothing but a Neuralink brain-computer interface.
I mean, it sounds completely like a scene from a sci-fi movie, right? But it is a genuine historical milestone.
It really is.
That player used their biological brain as a direct game controller.
Yeah.
And they did it with a level of speed and precision that the physical hands, mechanically, they just cannot match.
It is entirely mind-bending. But that exact moment, that's the jumping-off point for our deep dive today. We're looking at a thoroughly fascinating and, frankly, kind of chilling report titled The Frontier of Neurosecurity, Mind Theft in the BCI Age.
Yeah, that report is quite a read.
Oh, absolutely. So our mission for this deep dive is to explore how this dissolving boundary between human and machine is turning our very thoughts into a tradable commodity. And crucially, we want to figure out how you, the listener, can actually protect your mental privacy in a future that is arriving, way faster than anyone really anticipated.
Yeah, and we have to look at this miraculous technology through the lens of security, because we are entering a world where mental privacy is under active siege. I mean, the market for brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs, is exploding.
It's massive right now.
Exactly. It's going from $1.7 billion in 2022 to a projected $6.2 billion by 2030. And the regulatory frameworks, they simply haven't caught up.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we can understand how someone might steal data out of your mind, we kind of have to understand the hardware that's actually reading it in the first place.
Right, the attack surface.
Exactly, because there is a massive arms race happening right now. On one side, you have invasive tech. You've got Neuralink, right, with their N1 chip. This thing has 1,024 electrodes distributed across 64 ultra-thin threads.
Which is incredibly dense.
Yeah, and it's literally implanted into the brain,
Yeah. Taking
highly precise single-site recordings. It's almost like dropping 100 high-definition microphones directly onto the string section of an orchestra just to hear the violins perfectly.
That's a great way to put it. And then on the other side of that invasive spectrum, you have a stealth startup called Starfish Neuroscience.
Oh, right. Gabe Newell's company.
Exactly. The founder is Gabe Newell, the creator of Valve and the Half-Life gaming franchise. He's been quietly pushing this since, I think, 2019. And Starfish is building something entirely different from Neuralink.
How so?
Well, instead of one dense chip, they're aiming for multiple smaller chips placed in different locations across the skull. But the defining feature here is their power efficiency. They are running on just 1.1 milliwatts, which is, about 5 times more efficient than Neuralink.
But wait, why does power consumption even matter that much? I mean, if it's effectively a game controller, who cares if it drains a battery slightly faster?
Oh, it actually has nothing to do with battery life. It comes down to biological thermodynamics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the human brain does not have cooling fans.
Right.
So if you implant a computer chip into a brain and it runs hot, it literally cooks the surrounding brain tissue.
Oh, wow. That's horrifying.
Yeah, heat dissipation is the primary bottleneck for brain implants. So by driving the power down to 1.1 milliwatts, Starfish basically solves the heat problem, meaning you can safely implant multiple chips to cover entirely different regions of the brain simultaneously without causing any thermal damage.
It's basically like looking at the early days of the console wars. But instead of, Sega and Nintendo fighting over 16-bit graphics, Neuralink and Starfish are fighting over brain coverage and thermal dynamics. Let's look at the actual gaming advantage this hardware provides, though. The sources show that the tournament player, using the BCI, dropped their reaction time from an average of 250 milliseconds down to 180 milliseconds. That is a massive 28% improvement.
It is huge. And the physical reason for that drop is really just the elimination of the biological middleman.
What do you mean?
Well, in a normal setup, your brain registers an event on the screen, processes it, and then has to send a physical signal down your spinal cord to the muscles in your hand just to click a mouse.
Which takes time.
Right, that travel time takes milliseconds. The BCI intercepts the intention at the source inside the motor cortex and sends it directly to the game. Plus, you know, a player can multitask in the game without any physical fatigue.
So if this tech gives you a 28% reaction time advantage, isn't it inevitable that every competitive gamer will be forced to use it just to keep up?
What's fascinating here is that the technological trade-off between resolution and coverage is driving a parallel, highly accessible market.
The non-invasive stuff.
Exactly. Not everyone wants brain surgery to play a video game. That's where projects like OpenBCI's Galea come in. It's a headset that sits on the outside of your head and measures EEG brain signals.
Just normal electrodes on the scalp, right?
Right. EEG relies on electrodes placed on the scalp to detect the electrical chatter of your brain through the skull. It's obviously less precise than an implant. It's more like listening to that orchestra you mentioned, but from the parking lot outside the concert hall.
That makes sense.
But it combines that data with other things: eye movement, heart rate, skin response, and muscle activity.
And we are already seeing this hit the consumer market, too. Like, look at the HyperX and Neurable headset from CES 2026. It's a non-invasive device that monitors your focus in real time.
Yeah, that one made a lot of waves.
It features cognitive priming before you play, and even has tilt prevention to warn you when you are getting too angry or frustrated to play well. Which, I mean, I definitely need tilt prevention. But this hardware isn't just passively reading your signals, is it?
No, not at all. Galea and similar advanced setups are bidirectional systems. They are capable of transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS.
Wait, how does that actually work? How does a gaming headset change your brain?
So TMS uses an electromagnetic coil placed against your scalp. It generates these rapid, highly targeted magnetic fields that pass right through your skull.
Oh, wow.
And they induce small electrical currents in specific areas of your brain. These currents force targeted neurons to fire, which literally alters your chemical and emotional state.
That is wild.
It introduces profound ethical questions. Imagine a horror game detecting your fear is too low and using magnetic pulses to artificially induce a state of anxiety, or a competitive game artificially calming you down. Mm-hmm. We're talking about fundamentally altering a user's biological state to enhance an entertainment experience.
Okay, so if a headset like Galea can read and alter biological states like fear and focus, what exactly does that data look like on the back end? Because we are moving way beyond a simple string of code that says press A to jump.
Way beyond it.
Your neural data bypasses all of your conscious filtering. I mean, you can lie on a survey, you can use incognito mode on your browser, but your raw brain signals are completely unfiltered.
And the accuracy rates the sources outline for extracting these unfiltered states are staggering. By analyzing EEG signals, these systems can detect your mental fatigue with 85 to 95% accuracy.
That's incredibly high.
It gets crazier. Your attention levels at 80 to 90%, your emotional states like happiness, anger, fear at 75 to 85%, and incredibly, they can even infer political or religious beliefs with 60 to 70% accuracy.
Wait, I have to push back here. I put on a headset to play a first-person shooter. How on earth does my gaming headset figure out who I'm voting for or what my religious beliefs are just from me shooting virtual zombies?
Well, it comes down to a neurological phenomenon called event-related potentials, or ERPs. Your brain reacts to subtle stimuli before your conscious mind even registers what you were looking at.
Okay.
Imagine you were playing that zombie game, right?
Yeah.
And the environment is filled with background details. Posters on a wall, symbols, characters of varying demographics.
Okay, so I'm running down a virtual hallway, and my eyes sweep past a poster.
Exactly. When your eyes pass over a symbol associated with a specific political ideology or religious belief, your visual cortex processes it instantly. If it aligns with your core beliefs or triggers a negative bias, your brain emits a highly specific electrical spike.
That's the ERP.
Right, that's the ERP. And it happens in mere milliseconds. Now, and just to be clear, we are simply reporting what the source material states these systems are capable of analyzing. We aren't endorsing the idea of profiling people this way, but this is what the tech can pull.
Right, so before I even consciously think, oh, there's a political poster, the raw subconscious exhaust is already out there.
Yes. The BCI captures that raw subconscious reaction. You don't have to interact with the poster. You don't have to stop playing. With enough training data, machine learning algorithms compile thousands of these micro-reactions over hours of gameplay.
To build a profile.
Exactly. To build a deeply accurate profile of your inner beliefs and preferences.
Which explains why this data is incredibly valuable. I mean, to give you, the listener, some context on the economics here. Traditional data brokers sell your normal internet profile, your browsing history, your credit card purchases, for about 50 cents to $2.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap. But on the dark web, just 1 hour of raw EEG data goes for $100 to $500.
Wow.
Data from a professional gamer can sell for $10,000 to $50,000 for competitive intelligence. And neural data from executives or VIPs, that can command over $100,000. It is the ultimate tool for prediction and manipulation,
making it an absolute goldmine for advertisers, insurers, and obviously hackers. That pricing structure practically guarantees a black market. So if a VIP's neural data is worth six figures, how are attackers actually intercepting it? How do you hack a brain?
Well, the sources highlight something called brain tapping. Let's go back to that 180 millisecond reaction time we talked about earlier.
Right, the esports advantage.
Yeah. It turns out your motor cortex shows preparatory neural activity 300 to 500 milliseconds before you actually act.
So before you physically press a button or even consciously realize you've made the decision to execute a move, your brain signals your intent.
Yes, which means if an opponent intercepts that signal, they have a literal psychic advantage.
It's like someone screen cheating in GoldenEye back in the day, looking at your side of the split screen TV to see where you're hiding. Except instead of looking at your TV screen, they are wirelessly looking inside your cerebral cortex half a second before you even move.
That is a perfect analogy.
And the vulnerability enabling this is usually Bluetooth, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. Gamers demand low latency. You need your thoughts translated in 100 to 200 milliseconds, or the game feels laggy and unresponsive. But strong encryption requires processing power.
And processing power takes time.
Exactly. It adds 20 to 50 milliseconds of latency. So to make the game run faster, manufacturers are deliberately using weak encryption, or sometimes no encryption at all, on that Bluetooth connection.
That is insane. It's like playing poker, but asking to play with a transparent hand of cards just so the dealer can deal them faster. It completely defeats the purpose of security.
It really does.
The sources list 10 specific Bluetooth attacks. Things with names like the KNOB attack and blue bugging. What are the actual mechanics of those attacks?
So KNOB stands for Key Negotiation of Bluetooth. When your headset first connects to your console, they perform a digital handshake to negotiate how strong the encryption key should be.
Right.
An attacker intercepts that handshake and forces both devices to agree on an artificially weak single-byte encryption key.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Once the lock is downgraded to something practically useless, the attacker effortlessly decrypts the live neural feed.
And what about blue bugging?
Blue bugging goes a step further. Instead of just listening, the attacker exploits vulnerabilities in the Bluetooth protocol to completely take over the device. They turn your headset into a silent transmitter that beams your data directly to them.
But what if they don't want to just steal the data? What if they want to mess with it?
That introduces the threat of adversarial machine learning attacks. A BCI relies on machine learning to translate your thoughts, right?
Yeah.
When you first get a headset, you have to calibrate it. The system asks you to think about moving left, moving right, or remaining calm. An attacker can poison the algorithms by subtly injecting bad data during this calibration phase.
So they train my headset to misinterpret my own brainwaves.
Exactly, the issue. And this is particularly terrifying if BCI is ever used in judicial systems for lie detection, which, by the way, some countries are already exploring.
Wow, really?
Yes. If you praise in the baseline calibration so the algorithm fundamentally misunderstands the user's stress response, a criminal could trick the system into reading a lie as the truth or falsely convict an innocent person.
Wait, if an attacker can hijack the connection and mess with the algorithms, can they send signals ion? We talked about transcranial magnetic stimulation earlier.
If we connect this to the bigger picture.
Yes.
The bidirectional threat. Because devices like Galea can send signals back to the brain, a hijacked connection isn't just about data theft.
It's about control.
Precisely. An attacker who breaches the stimulation feature can actively induce false sensations, trigger paralyzing fear, or disrupt your motor control. Hijacking a BCI to force a soldier to fire on friendly forces or to freeze in combat. It isn't science fiction anymore.
That's terrifying.
The Pentagon has actually established a neurosecurity working group because this is a recognized threat model for brain-controlled military systems.
We are literally walking around with hackable brains and no one is stopping it. You would think with vulnerabilities this massive, like, hackers literally able to intercept your subconscious thoughts or send magnetic pulses into your brain, that governments are stepping in to protect you. But there is a massive regulatory void.
Massive.
Yeah.
In the United States, the FDA regulates medical devices. So if you get a Neuralink implant to treat epilepsy or paralysis, there's rigorous oversight.
Sure, that makes sense.
But consumer gaming headsets, the FDA essentially says, You aren't treating a disease, you're playing a video game, so it's not our jurisdiction.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, consumer BCIs completely escape FDA oversight, and there are no unified global standards for neural data protection.
Which means we're currently signing away our mental privacy in gaming ELAs. You buy a $60 game, you blindly click accept on the terms of service so you can start playing, and you have legally authorized a corporation to harvest your deepest biological responses. It's like your credit card and your browsing history currently have more federal legal protection than your innermost subconscious thoughts.
It's a huge problem. Frameworks like GDPR in Europe were built for traditional data names, addresses, emails. They fail completely when applied to biometric data that reveals unvocalized intentions.
Are there any protections on the horizon, though?
Well, there is some movement. In 2021, Chile passed a historic constitutional amendment. It was the first legal ruling globally to formally recognize mental privacy as a protected human right.
That's tied to the NeuroRights movement, right? Led by Rafael Yust at Columbia University. Yes. They are advocating for 5 core rights. Let's we'll list them really quick. Mental privacy, personal identity, free will, equal access, and protection from bias. I mean, it sounds so dystopian that we even have to define free will as a legal right in the context of consumer electronics.
This raises an important question, right? Who actually owns your thoughts once they leave your biological brain? It highlights the severity of the blind spot. When you combine unregulated technology with highly vulnerable hardware, the real-world scenarios become deeply concerning. The sources outline several very specific scenarios for the near future of gaming if these EOAs and hardware flaws are exploited.
Let's map out what this actually looks like. Scenario 1, neural ransomware. Forget hackers locking your computer files. Imagine a hacker intercepts your unencrypted Bluetooth headset data for months.
Terrifying thought.
They build a profile of your deepest fears, your sexual preferences, your suicidal thoughts, and then they send you a message threatening to leak all of it to your employer or family unless you pay them $50,000 in crypto.
And that's just the hackers. Scenario 2 is corporate. Neuromarketing in loot boxes. This is where gaming companies use the headset to monitor your dopamine release and your exact frustration levels in real time.
But how does that actually work on the brain compared to normal game design? Think about your favorite game. How is this different?
Traditional game design relies on trial and error. A developer guesses what might make you want to buy a microtransaction based on generalized player data.
Like putting a store button on the death screen.
Exactly. But BCI neuromarketing uses adaptive manipulation. The game reads your biological responses directly. It sees the exact mechanics that trigger your brain's reward centers. It monitors your stress and triggers microtransactions at the exact millisecond. Your impulse control is lowest and your psychological vulnerability is highest.
Wow.
It exploits human psychology perfectly, making it nearly impossible for your conscious brain to resist the urge to buy.
It's literally weaponized game design. Then there's scenario 3, corporate espionage. Rival companies stealing game mechanics or story twists straight from the motor cortex and brain waves of developers while they're just sitting at their desks working on unannounced projects.
Yeah, just bleeding intellectual property straight from the mind. And scenario 4, neural performance enhancement.
The doping crisis.
Exactly. This is a new kind of doping crisis in competitive esports. We talked about how these devices can use magnetic pulses to stimulate the brain and improve focus. What happens when competitive gamers start using unauthorized, potentially brain-damaging stimulation protocols just to stay relevant in a tournament?
How do you even test for that? I mean, traditional drug tests look for chemicals in your blood.
You can't. You cannot test if someone's brain waves were artificially optimized the night before a tournament using a magnetic coil. The physical hardware might be removed, but the neural pathways have already been artificially primed for peak performance.
So let's recap this incredible journey. We started with the awe-inspiring reality of humans controlling games with their minds at speeds physical hands could never reach. But we've peeled back the layers to find a really chilling realization. Our thoughts, our raw subconscious exhaust. It's the 21st century's black gold.
Absolutely.
It's incredibly valuable, unregulated, vulnerable to unencrypted Bluetooth connections, and entirely exposed to everything from brain tapping to adaptive neuromarketing.
But there are practical defense mechanisms you can use right now.
Right. Let's give the listener some actionable advice.
The sources emphasize treating your neural privacy the way you would treat your physical safety. Read privacy policies extremely carefully. Know exactly what a company plans to do with your biometric data.
Don't just click accept.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Use VPNs to encrypt your device connections.
Yeah.
And disable Bluetooth on these devices when you are not actively using them. Do not leave the connection broadcasting your data into the open air.
Also, look for devices that offer local processing, meaning your neural data stays on the physical hardware in your living room and doesn't get uploaded to a cloud server to be processed.
And if you are deeply serious about security, store your neural headsets in Faraday bags when you aren't playing.
A Faraday bag? Okay, can you explain what that is?
Sure. A Faraday bag is a pouch lined with conductive metal mesh. It catches and disperses any electromagnetic signal, completely blocking remote wireless access. Nothing can broadcast out, and no malicious signals can be beamed in.
So what does this all mean? It means the neurosecurity arms race has officially begun. Your mind is the absolute last frontier of privacy, and right now it is a frontier that is largely undefended by the law.
I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We talked about how your motor cortex shows preparatory activity 300 to 500 milliseconds before you physically act.
As these machine learning algorithms get faster and the hardware gets more integrated, if your BCI headset begins to predict and execute your in-game actions 300 milliseconds before you are consciously aware you made a decision, are you still the one playing the game? Or is the machine playing you?